You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Happy New Year, everybody. I hope everyone has a great 2022. Except for you, Betty White, no 2022 for you, which is sad for us because everyone loved you and we are all going to miss you. Okay, despite the fact that it is a brand new year, there are people out there shitting the bed in the same old ways, or shitting themselves in the same old ways in the case of Rutledge Diaz IV. You may remember that name, and if you do, you have a better memory for names than I do. He was the Louisiana man who made the news in 2019, made a splash or a sploosh, also made the top of my podcast, after he hired a woman or women to take care of his disabled brother and change his disabled brother's diapers, only there was no brother, disabled or otherwise, although there were diapers. Diaz himself was wearing them. He was arrested and charged with sex trafficking, amongst other things, because he asked the women he hired to help him find other women who might want to babysit for his brother and change his brother's diapers. Again, the brother didn't exist, but the diapers did. Diaz is wearing them. Well, poops, he did it again. Sorry about that. Couldn't resist. Diaz was arrested last week for the same shit. Different year. Hiring women to change his diapers under false pretenses and asking those women to help him find other women to change his diapers under the same false pretenses. It is a sad and weird story. But there's a lesson in it for us, if we care to see it, about how little home health care workers are paid compared to sex workers. A home health care worker changing your diapers, minimum wage. A sex worker changing your diapers, hundreds of dollars an hour plus tip. And people wonder why some women and some men choose sex work. Anyway, Diaz has always been too cheap to honestly hire actual sex workers and too dumb, apparently, to learn his lesson the first time he was arrested for dishonestly hiring home healthcare workers. Another person who made the news, shitting the bed in a very predictable fashion, just as 2021 was coming to an end, Jeffrey McCall. If you saw the excellent documentary Pray Away the Gay on Netflix about the collapse of the conversion therapy movement, that's the ex-gay movement funded and pushed by evangelical Christians, you'll remember McCall. He was the ex-gay guy who stepped up to start a new ex-gay organization and lead ex-gay marches of dozens of people in Washington, D.C., after the leaders of Exodus International, which was the biggest and oldest ex-gay organization, after those people, the founders, leaders of Exodus International, admitted that praying away the gay didn't work, had never worked, and it harmed the people who tried. They admitted all of that and shut themselves down. Well, after Exodus shut down, Jeffrey McCall started a new organization and tried to revive the movement. In addition to being ex-gay, McCall also claimed to be ex-trans, so Jesus saved him from being a gay man and a straight woman at the same time, I guess. It's kind of confusing. Anyway, here's Jeffrey McCall himself being interviewed on the Christian Broadcast Network about how it all went down.
I thought, maybe I'll just give God a chance. He did speak to me and said I was going to live for him. And that summer, the Lord and I began to try to have a relationship.
All right, so he's America's most prominent ex-gay man, the leader of what's left of the ex-gay movement, a darling of the religious right, frequent guest on Christian TV shows and podcasts, paid to speak at Christian conferences. There are a million videos of him online giving testimony in fundamentalist churches about his relationship with Jesus and how that relationship with Jesus saved him and cured him, and you know where this is going, right? Turns out McCall and Jesus, that relationship they have, apparently it's an open one. Because McCall, like all ex-gay leaders in the past, McCall was out there fucking men, lots of men. In a move that looked like he was trying to get ahead of perhaps a coming expose, McCall, who identifies as a former homosexual, which is long for ex-gay, posted a statement. McCall posted a statement to Facebook confessing to, you'll never guess. Let's just say McCall didn't announce that he'd created a carbon capture technology that's going to save the world. No, he captured dick. Lots of dick. The trouble began for McCall as he wrote in his statement, when he gave his heart away to a straight guy, he was only trying to help. Quote, after denying what I wanted with him, I then went on to fall sexually with a man. This fall led to multiple falls with multiple men. The statement goes on and on and on. McCall pulls the dick out of his mouth long enough to claim and insist that he is still ex-gay, and ends with, I am just a peasant who tried to help save people's eternal lives and point them to Jesus, all while going through my own process. A process that apparently involves sucking a lot of dick, a whole lot of dick. A process I could get behind or in front of or on my knees for. But honestly, after reading McCall's statement, I'm kind of pissed. How is this guy getting more dick than I am? Now, I stick to the regular dick I've got in my life. I'm not out there prowling rest stops or evangelical fundamentalist Christian church mixers. And I've always been a quality over quantity guy when it comes to dick. And I just think the quality of the dick I'm getting is probably better than the quality of the dick McCall was getting. But just on principle, it seems to me that the leader of what's left of the ex-gay movement shouldn't be getting more dick than I am. I would say he shouldn't be getting any dick, but if we've learned anything about the leaders of ex-gay organizations over the years, those guys always are getting plenty of dick because they're always getting caught. They're always getting in trouble for it, always getting caught with dicks in their mouths, dicks plural. So it's not like I expected McCall was getting no dick. I just didn't expect him to be getting all the dick. So, you know, whoever's in charge of dick rations here in the simulation we're all currently living in, I'd like to speak to your manager. McCall will ultimately be replaced. He'll resign in disgrace. And like every other ex-gay leader interviewed in Pray Away the Gay, I fully expect that McCall will come out as ex-ex-gay someday. Because they all learn eventually that you can't pray away the gay. But it seems like you can fuck away the ex-gay. All right, coming up on today's show on the Micro and Magnum editions of the Savage Lovecast, Leah Carey from the Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast joins me to talk about newly fat bodies and the impact those newly fat bodies can have on our long-term relationships. And on the Magnum Savage Lovecast, James McKay joins me to talk about his study of hypnosis porn. All that coming up on the show. And coming up this Thursday, we do a monthly Zoom hangout exclusively for Magnum subscribers to the Savage Lovecast on the first Thursday of every month. Usually we call it Sack Lunch. This one we're calling Happy Sack because we're doing it at happy hour, 6 p.m. Well, happy hour for me, 6 p.m. Pacific time, happy hour for everybody on the West Coast, 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you'd like to join me and my Magnum subs for this hangout, go to savage.love and become a Magnum subscriber now.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 43-year-old woman from Long Island, New York. I am bisexual. I am in an open relationship for the past 7 years. I've recently been through something that I can only classify as trauma because that's how it feels, and I was hoping to get some advice on how to get past it. My boyfriend and I met on a website for kinky people. It is not a dating app, more like a social media type of page. I was closeted for the large portion of my adult life, including through a marriage that was basically sexless. And then finally, I found this site and had an awakening and was able to express myself with pictures and through writings and through sharing with a community that I felt a part of. I met my boyfriend there. We have met other people on the site and have played together, played separately. Overall, it's really been a big part of my life. It's been a big part of our relationship. And it was something and some place that I always felt safe. Recently, my boyfriend had sent a message to somebody, and unfortunately, it turned out to be a catfish situation. And this person screenshot images from my page, not suitable for work images, and tried to extort us. Found us on regular social media, sent threatening messages that they wanted money, and actually sent a photo, a screenshot of a photo of me giving my boyfriend a blowjob to a family member of mine, to my brother. It was very traumatizing. We contacted the police, we contacted the site. There really wasn't much anybody could do. And in the end, we deactivated our pages. I feel so violated. I feel like some place that I thought was safe turned out not to be. It's made me question all of my own judgment in terms of posting any photos there, in terms of feeling safe. I feel stupid that I felt safe there. It's made me question my boyfriend's choices. How could he trust this person? You know, they exchanged a few messages and then he cut the conversation off because he felt like something was weird. But at that point, the damage had sort of already been done. I don't know how to move past it. I feel like anything kink related right now feels upsetting to me. And at the same time, I'm angry that this was taken away from me. I'm not really sure what to do. Was hoping you had some advice.
First, I want to affirm your feelings. You feel violated because you were violated. What this person did was brutal and horrible, and a reminder that there are shitty people everywhere. There are shitty people in every place you've ever been where you felt safe or feel safe. I remember the first time I walked into a gay bar, Bushes on Halsted in Chicago, with the first guy I was ever kind of dating or serious about, my first boyfriend. I was still a teenager. And passing through the doors into this bar felt like going through some kind of airlock where suddenly all this pressure that I felt every second of every day was lifted from my shoulders. And I'd been living under that sort of oppressive, you know, heterosexist horseshit for so long that it just felt normal. I wasn't even aware of the pressure until I walked into this gay bar and I was surrounded by other gay men in a gay space. And I felt so free. It felt like, for me, like a safe space. And then a few years later, not long after that, a friend went to a gay bar and met a guy and went home with him, something I had done in gay bars where I felt safe, and was murdered by the guy he went home with. And that was, for me, a reminder that there are shitty people everywhere, including shitty people in the gay bars where I had felt safe in the past. So what did you learn? You learned something that you kind of, I'm not blaming you, I'm not faulting you, I'm not shaming you at all. You learned something or were reminded of something that you kind of already knew or should have known, that there are shitty, untrustworthy people everywhere. And some of them are out there trawling personal sites, you know, FetLife Recon, people's DMs on Instagram. They're everywhere, some shitty people who are catfishing and attempting to blackmail people for flirting the way people flirt these days, which is often by swapping dirty photographs, personal photographs. And people can wind up feeling so safe on a particular website or in a particular space that they swap these dirty photographs with people that they don't know. And for the most part, that doesn't end badly. For the most part, that's how people make new sex friends and sometimes meet people that they end up in relationships with, loving and long-term relationships with. And the risks of encountering a shitty person, you know, in a gay bar or on a dating app, are worth the potential rewards of having great sex with somebody that you like or winding up in a long-term relationship or a short-term successful relationship with someone whose company and genitals you really enjoy. So I just want you to put this in perspective. Yes, it's horrible what this person did to you. You might want to reassess the kind of photographs that you share with people that you don't know or that you post publicly, because this is a thing that can happen. You can be catfished, someone can connect you to your other social media, find your family members, and then threaten you threaten, you know, extort you for money. Otherwise, they're going to take this shit to your employers or your family members. And oh my God, it is a terrible thing. And it happened to you. And I am so sorry. So what do you do? I didn't let the person who murdered my friend prevent me from going to or enjoying gay bars ever again. It did become something that I thought about, not that I'm murder shaming my friend who got murdered. I'm sure he was careful and conscientious about the people he went home with too, but it was something I thought about when I went to gay bars was, you know, not everybody you meet is a good guy just because he's in a gay bar. And you need now, as you get back on this space, to know that not everyone who can access your images that you post publicly and not everyone that you wind up talking to is going to be a good person. One of them might be a reputational murderer, someone who wants to, you know, send these kinds of pictures to your brother if you don't send them money. Now, I think you should get back on that website. That person who attempted to extort you already has your pictures. That cow is already out of the barn. All you're doing by not being on that website where you made connections in the past that you enjoyed and met people who were good and decent people that you and your boyfriend enjoyed spending time with, all you're doing by not getting back on that website is preventing yourself from having those good experiences, good connections in the future without in any way decreasing the risk that this person who already has your photos might come after you again. So remind yourself that we live at a time and we live in a world where almost everyone has shared these kinds of photographs. And almost everyone, I think under 40 or 50, has shared these kinds of photographs with strangers. And for the most part, they didn't suffer any reputational consequences, no blowback, no extortion attempts. For the most part, it goes well. But I think these days people have more sympathy, more empathy for those whose photos wind up being weaponized in the way your photos were weaponized, because everyone looks at that now. Hopefully everyone looks at that now and thinks, well, there but for the grace of God go I. There but for, you know, a chance encounter with a catfishing, blackmailing asshole go I. So don't feel like you're being judged. Don't feel like you did anything wrong. Something wrong was done to you. All right, now I'm going to play a call from somebody who just went through what you're going through.
Hello, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. African-American bisexual male here in the land of Texas, shitty-ass fucking Texas, where abortions are illegal. But yes, I do have abortion pills just in case any of my friends or their daughters need one. No problem here that I can tell, but I do want to share a story with your listeners about recently being catfished. I was on an app that is used for meeting, greeting, and other things sexual, and as you put it, these things are just bars in your pocket. So I went to the bar in my pocket instead of going to a real one. I was able to mutually connect with the woman before I was able to start messaging her, and we started chatting. At her behest, the conversation sexually escalated a bit, and then she asked to go to a different app. Apparently, we were leaving the bar. So we started messaging on the app, and she asked me if I have an IG to see if I have more pictures. My fault, my IG was not private, hers was. We continued messaging on the second app, and she sends me a picture of her being bored. She then asked me to send her a picture of me being bored. I consider this flirting. We go back and forth until she sends me a picture of her topless. We continue tit for tat until the pictures we are sending are nudes. Then abruptly I get a message that is a compilation of just my photos, which include my nudes, saying that she's going to spread these pics all over the internet and share them with my friends and family. I then quickly remember something I witnessed years ago on television. It was a monologue that David Letterman was giving about being bribed by an anonymous person concerning the sex that he was having with women at work who were not his wife. Long story short, after the 10-minute monologue, I could hardly believe what I had witnessed. To me, I witnessed someone wrestling back their power and leaving their adversary with the shame. So that's what I did. I told the person that they could go ahead and release the photos, but to make sure they send them in style and to use a filter to make sure my eyes looked pretty. I then reported the messaging thread to the app support and then blocked that person. I felt no shame or guilt or anything negative regarding this and wanted to share this with your listeners. I'm certain at least one has had this happen to them in some sort of form. But I also wanted to say that these acts are only potentially destabilizing because we have a culture massaged and dripping in Christian hypocrisy where a multi-billion dollar porn industry flourishes. You mean to tell me the only people interested in dirty messaging, porn, erotica, hooking up are heathens or nerds who play fantasy in their basement somewhere? those are just the people propping up our sexual infrastructure? No. But I will say that I do think we can inoculate ourselves from shame by telling our truths and laying the guilt with the bigoted, hypocritical adversaries who try to sully us by a culture they statistically also participate in. Fuck them.
Thank you so much for calling. Thank you so much for sharing. Of course, not everyone is going to be in a position to call a catfishing blackmailer's bluff like you did. But man, wouldn't it be nice if we lived in a world where everyone could. If you've got a small business, you know that there's nothing more valuable than your time. So stop wasting your time on trips to the post office. Stamps.com makes it easy to mail and ship right from your computer. Save time and save money with Stamps.com. Send letters and packages for less with discounted rates from USPS, UPS, and more. Since 1998, Stamps.com has been an indispensable tool for nearly 1 million businesses. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. Whether you're an office sending invoices, a side hustle Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders every day, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer, no special supplies or equipment, and then within minutes you'll be up and running, printing official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and sending it anywhere you want to send it. And you'll get exclusive discounts on postage and shipping from USPS and UPS. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. No traffic, no lines, no wasting time. Cut the confusion out of shipping with Stamps.com's new Rate Advisor tool. You can compare shipping rates and timelines to easily find the best option. Save time and save money with Stamps.com. There's no risk. And with my promo code SAVAGE, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, promo code SAVAGE. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
Hi, Dan. I really need your help. I've been in a relationship with a man I really love for the last 3 years, and he makes me feel safe and loved and cherished, and he's the first person I've ever been in love with and been in a long-term relationship with. I'm 25, and I know I want to have kids one day, around the time probably that I'm 30. And he doesn't think that he wants kids. And it's been like something that keeps coming around my head because we both agreed that we kind of think where our relationship is not going to be forever, but we don't want to break up. And we're living together and looking at our lease date as like the time when we'll have to make a decision to stay together another year and then check in again a year later or break things off. I just really am nervous that I'm gonna keep staying with him for like one more year and one more year and one more year because I love him and I wanna be with him. And I just wish he wanted kids, but you can't go into something like that with a person who is not fully wanting them. I mean, I don't wanna do that. And so, it's leaving me with this question for you. Like, I know I'm 25 and he's 27. We're pretty young. And I'm just wondering what you think. Like, are we so young that it's okay for me to keep waiting and, like, being with him because I love him and I want to be with him? Or should I be, like, following my head more than my heart and trying to find someone who wants what I want? I'm worried I won't find anyone who loves me the way that he does.
I think you're young. You're only 25 years old. Woman's peak fertility between teens and late 20s, but women have babies, healthy babies, well into their 30s, 40s these days. So there's no rush. There's plenty of time. The risk here, and obviously what you're wrestling with, is the outside chance that you may wait and linger in this relationship so long that you kind of run out your own biological clock, but you've got a lot of biological clock left to go. You've got a lot of years. You've got a lot of time. So you have to ask yourself if all the loving and cherishing going on in this relationship, your first serious relationship, the first loving relationship that you've ever been in, is worth, I guess, the small risk that you may wake up in this relationship at 35 or 37 and find getting pregnant with a new partner or leaving this guy if he still doesn't want kids and getting pregnant on your own to be a lot more difficult than it might have been to get pregnant at 27 with him if he would change his mind. And I don't think you should hold out for him to change his mind, or with someone else if you'd left him and gone and found a new partner who loved and cherished you just as much, that you felt just as strongly about, and who wanted the same things in life that you wanted. Children is right up there with, I think, sexual compatibility and other things that people should prioritize when they're looking at someone as a potential long-term prospect, and you're not on the same page about children. Now, you can look at each other and say, okay, well, that means that there is a window where we can be together and love each other, but there is a point at which we're going to have to part. The longer you're together, particularly if your feelings for each other continue to grow, the harder that parting becomes, or the more inconceivable it can become. And in the end, you may decide to give up on having kids. In the end, he may decide, if you threaten to leave him and you're serious about it, to consent to having kids to keep you. One of you, if you stay together forever, is going to have to pay the steepest price of admission to have kids or not have kids. You will have to forego children, or he will have to agree to have children. And if looking down the road, looking ahead to that, not having kids in your case, or potentially having kids in his case, or having to leave each other after another 3 years, another 10 years together so that you can go have kids with someone else, if all of that is too horrible to contemplate, yeah, maybe you should break up now. But I wouldn't, if I were in your shoes, break up now over this. I would give it some time. I would give it another couple of years. Your feelings might change about having kids. His feelings might change about not having kids, or your feelings about him might change. The relationship in a couple of years could run its course and be wrapping up, and it not, and you guys could break up about something that's not about kids. It could be something else that leads to the end of this relationship. And hopefully if it ends, it'll end in as loving a fashion as it's been conducted so far. So yeah, give it another 24 months, another 2 years, another two re-uppings of the lease that you share, and then see how you're feeling. And if you're just as adamant about wanting to have kids and he's just as adamant about not wanting to have kids, at that point, maybe you should part.
This show is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're setting up a business or getting a creative or political project off the ground, you will find an indispensable partner in Squarespace. They make it easy to put together a good-looking website, blog, or online store. They have everything you need. Domains, boy, do they. Marketing tools, analytics, e-commerce. Buying a domain from Squarespace is simple because there's no hidden fees or price hikes. And Squarespace sells over 200 top-level domains so you can find the perfect name for your website. Choose a URL that ends in .com, .net, .org, or even get more specific with one like .art or .coffee, .cool, .cruise, .dating, .dentist, .diamonds, .exposed, .farm, .faith, .family, .gripe, .ninja, .pink, .rodeo, .vodka, and .soy. Who knew? You can put together video ads, launch online courses, put out a virtual tip jar. All the tools you need to monetize your website and reach your goals are there waiting for you. You'll create powerful email content that matches your website with your existing products, blog posts, and logo, so your messaging is consistent and effective. And what's more, everything you make with Squarespace translates perfectly to mobile. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. Early 30s. Poly female here on the West Coast. And in Kinkland, I identify as female dominant. So about a year ago, I was at a play party and I met a submissive man who knocked my socks off. I was wildly attracted to him. We had incredible chemistry. And so we continued to play together. And over time, we realized that our connection was romantic in addition to kinky. We became partners. And then about 4 months ago, we became primary partners. But something that's been a challenge in this connection is related to vanilla sex. For me, in addition to a really robust kink dynamic with my partners, I really value vanilla sex. For me, it fulfills this desire to feel desired by my partners, not just for the kinkiness that I can bring to our dynamic, but it makes me feel seen. It makes me feel attractive when someone wants just me through vanilla sex. But that's really hard for my partner. He's not really interested in vanilla sex with me. And it's been a struggle. He has vanilla sex with other people. So it's frustrating that we can't do that too. And he's given me various reasons. And about a month ago, after a very frustrating failed attempt initiated by me to have vanilla sex, it came out that he is very unattracted to my breasts, and this can make it very hard for him to be turned on during sex, vanilla sex, when I am naked. And wow, did this comment send me into a tailspin? I've spent more than half my life struggling with eating disorders, body dysmorphia. This partner knows this. And ever since that comment, I have been unable to be naked with him or any other partner, not just during sex, but even just around, you know, taking a shower, going in a hot tub, stuff like that. And frankly, Dan, the idea of ever being naked with a partner during sex right now sounds unfathomable. I feel like I don't want to turn someone off because they think my breasts are unattractive. It's been really, really tough. So my question is twofold. The first is, does this connection sound like bad news? Am I trying to make something out of this relationship that he's just unable and in some cases kind of cruel about going about telling me these things? And then also, I would really appreciate any advice that you or your listeners have. How can I regain a sense of body acceptance and confidence? It sounds really daunting to go the rest of my life always wearing a bra during sex or contemplating getting a boob job. So any advice or input you have, I would so very much appreciate.
Step one on regaining a sense of body confidence is to break the fuck up with this malicious asshole. What he said was obnoxious and inconsiderate, but not innocently so. What he said was malicious and cruel and intentionally so. He knew about your struggles with body dysmorphia, the eating disorders, and he said this to explain why he's having vanilla sex with other people and not interested in having vanilla sex with you. He targeted a part of your body to explain this? Yeah, no, he's got to go. You have got to break the fuck up with this guy. DTMFA, dump this motherfucker already. Dump the motherfucker yesterday. Then you have to really confront whatever it is in your head that is extrapolating from what he said, which is, I don't like your tits, and extrapolating from that to nobody likes my tits. That can't be true. You have had other sexual partners. There must be other partners in your sexual history who loved your tits, who vibed with your tits, who grooved on your tits, who appreciated your tits. Why are you giving so much weight to the asshole thing this asshole that you're going to break up with said, and not giving any weight to all those other people who've loved your body as it is? Why? Well, you know, we tend to blow up the negative, you know, and this isn't just about our bodies. You know, you get 100 positive comments about something you did, or 100 likes on a tweet, or, you know, a lot of positive feedback. One person says something negative and that's what you obsess about. I totally get it. I totally understand. But there's some part of your brain that needs to wrestle with that impulse, you know, that giving so much weight to the negative comment that he made. Negative and subjective. He's just talking about him and giving more weight, equal weight to the actions and comments of other people that you've been with who loved your body. He got in between you and your body and has made it difficult for you to love your body right now. Let some other people get in between you and your body, bring you back to your body. And even if you're having a hard time loving your body at this moment, look at the way these other people in your past or hopefully in your future can and do love your body, and let those experiences, that pleasure, let those affirmations wash away what this guy said. Your tits aren't ugly. He is ugly. Who he is. He is an ugly, unkind, malicious, cruel person. Your tits, beautiful, attractive. This guy, ugly and repulsive. Step one, get the fuck rid of him. Step two, reason with yourself. Talk to yourself. Let the rational part of your mind assess objectively how attractive your body is. Not to everyone, and no one's body is attractive to everyone, but attractive, objectively attractive, because others have found it attractive. And allow how other people have found you attractive to give you permission to illuminate the path back toward embracing your own body again and finding yourself attractive again and allowing yourself to know that indeed you are attractive and your tits are beautiful. And fuck this guy. Please break the fuck up with him right fucking now.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 32-year-old cis woman, poly, pansexual, calling to get some advice from you and your listeners about coping with changes in attraction, I guess, after weight gain. I've been married to my wife for 4 years. I gave birth to our baby almost 2 years ago. We have two long-term special guest stars with whom we are very close also outside of the bedroom. One who's been a long-distance partner on and off for the last decade. The other who was nearby, present for the birth of our child and all other major life things until my wife and I decided to move from California to Illinois about 9 months ago. Over the last 2 years, I've gained a lot of weight that I do not plan on trying to lose. What I'm up against is the feeling that my partners are no longer attracted to me now that I look different from before. Specifically, our male partner, who became the long-distance partner after the move earlier this year, he's always been attracted to a different type than me. He and my wife have had a relationship for the better part of the last 15 years. They are life partners, so I know he's not going to stop being a part of my life, and I don't plan on asking them to stop having sex if I'm not a part of it. But I'm trying to reckon with the fact that it's not an activity that he seems to be interested in doing with me anymore. You know, I was never really his type to begin with, and especially not now, and that's magnified by our visits being a few days of constant togetherness followed by many months of distance. So how do people deal with this when one of their partners is no longer attracted to them? My wife is GGG. She listens, she sees me, and makes me feel loved and desired. But I can't help but feel that I deserve an experience of being worshipped and wanted in my new fat body. All three of my partners have some history of their own body image issues, eating disorders, obsessive exercise, etc. Do you think it's possible for them to worship my fatness? How do I bring that out of them? Or do I just need to find my own new special guest star that loves fat ladies?
Joining me to help tackle this question, Leah Carey, a sex and intimacy coach and host of the podcast Good Girls Talk About Sex. She helps people identify and advocate for their own sexual pleasure and satisfaction, her superpower, radical empathy. Hey, Leah, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan.
So this is obviously a very sensitive subject.
Especially for those of us who were brought up as little girls who have been given a lifetime of images that we're supposed to live up to, and we can't. Those models don't even exist in real life. They're airbrushed to the maximum degree.
And bodies change in long-term relationships, but also desire wanes. Even when people don't get larger or smaller, people's hair falls out or doesn't fall out, oftentimes desire wanes over the decades. But she's pegged the waning of, you know, attraction from, I guess, the secondary, tertiary partners to her weight gain. And her question is the one I wanted to ask you about. can you not force, not coerce, not make, but can you induce a long-term partner to love your fat body, to worship your fat body? Or would be a better use of her time and less frustrating to find new partners who groove on her body as it is now?
Yeah, well, I love that she asked, should she find her own special guest star? Well, hell yes, she should. but that doesn't have to come at the expense of other people. My biggest question for her is, what does she want? Because I hear her talking in her call a lot about what other people think about her, and can she get them to see her the way that they used to? But I'm not entirely convinced that she wants this man to see her that way. I only hear her talking about, can I make him see me this way again? So my first question would be, do you even want to continue having sex with this man? And then if you do, what are the conversations you need to have? I hear you asking, can I get them to worship me? And I personally love that language. That's actually something that I ask of my partner. Like, I'm feeling really self-conscious about my stomach right now. Could you just spend a few minutes worshiping my stomach? Help me to see it through your eyes. Help me to see it the way that you do. So what does worshiping mean to you? Does it mean cuddling or stroking or saying nice words or grabbing it during sex? You know, figure out what that worshiping looks like for you, what that satisfaction would be. And then you can have that conversation with your partner about, here's something that this would make me feel really loved. This would make me feel really special and like you see me. And hopefully they're able to respond to that kind of languaging and that messaging. But then if they're not, then you have your answer that, no, this is not something that can happen.
I often think that one of the dirty little secrets of the sex and relationship advice industrial complex is that we spend a lot of time pretending that desire isn't going to change. We at once fan the, embers of those sparks. How do you keep the spark alive? Spend a lot of the time addressing that. But we make people feel like there's something wrong with their relationships if there is less sexual passion, or if the sexual connection basically, the language is just so dark, withers and dies, or the relationship changes where sex is less central. I don't want to put in the caller's head that because the sexual connection that wasn't, it doesn't sound like very strong in the first place with the secondary partners, that if it goes away, that she has to, throw these people out of her life. There's a lot of people out there in long-term relationships that were very sexually passionate at the start that are now more companionate. There's nothing wrong with those relationships. But to find that kind of, the desire that can be very inspiring, it can really turn people on, but to find that kind of passionate desire for who you are now or where you are now sometimes means finding new people regardless of your size or what changes your bodies have undergone over time. Does not? Can we risk being honest about that in the sex and relationship advice industrial complex ever?
I love that. Yes, I think we need more of that. And I also think that, this idea of changing bodies and gaining weight is so fraught. And one of the things that she mentioned is that all of her partners have histories of some sort of disordered behavior around food and weight, which means that if they start acting differently toward her body, it may have nothing to do with her body. And it may be all about what the changes in her body represent to them and their own fears. And that's just not something you're ever going to be able to reckon with. Like, that is not yours to reckon with.
I remember interviewing when I first started writing Savage Love. This is easily 25, 28, maybe even 30 years ago, maybe in the first year of the column. I did a column about amputee fetishists, and I spoke to a woman who was an amputee. And, we talked about objectification. We talked about being fetishized. And she said something that I thought was so smart and that was in my column 30 years ago, that she'd rather be desired for who she is than despite who she is. And I found that very personally, like, that stuck with me because I found that empowering about who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would put my money on, you can't insist that people find you attractive over time or through changes, but you can find people who find you attractive, who are into you.
Yes.
And allow your long-term partners to worship you in the intimate ways long-term partners can that aren't necessarily about sex or eroticism, and allow new partners just to groove on the physical object that you are.
Mm-hmm. And there are people, no matter your shape or size, there are people who want to love you, worship you, touch you, be with you. That is something that I can, I know it's so hard for people to hear this, and I get it because I come from a background of a really poor relationship with my body and a lot of repression. I can guarantee you there are people who want to love you in the body that you're in today. And so help them to find you by going out there and being your awesome self.
Leah Carey, sex and intimacy coach, host of Good Girls Talk About Sex, a podcast where she interviews everyday people, anyone brought up as a little girl, plus trans women, about their sexual histories. A great listen for everybody, but particularly for straight cisgender men who want insight into what their partners want and need. Leah, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old cishet gal living in the UK, and I have a weird question about myself. After I have sex with someone for the first time, I always end up with these really strange flashbacks. The day after, or even a couple days after, I'll suddenly have this like memory of a moment during sex, and then I'll experience extreme repulsion throughout my body, and I'll have to like shut my eyes and essentially just shake it off. I mentioned this to a friend of mine recently, and she thought it might be because I felt manipulated or coerced by the guy, but in every circumstance that I remember this happening in, it's been with guys who I feel really comfortable with and who I want to sleep with. I'm initiating, I'm interested, I want to do this. Is this something that you've heard of before? I feel pretty much insane.
I haven't heard of this before. Well, I mean, of course, I have heard of this before. People will sometimes do something during sex that then they'll think about later and feel deep shame about. You know, I know lots of guys who before they came out would have gay sex, be very into it in the moment, and then be disgusted by it and disgusted with themselves when they thought about it later or were reminded of it later. You're straight, you're not being coerced or manipulated into doing anything in the moment that you don't want to do. So what's different in the moment? Well, in the moment, just like those closeted guys, I remember from back in the day when I was sleeping with closeted guys, in the moment you're aroused. And later, when you recall something that went down or you flash on a particular moment, you're not in a state of arousal. There's been a lot written about the line between, you know, arousal and disgust, and how so many of the things that we do during sex, if we just thought of them sort of walled off from desire, how kind of gross they would be. If it's really a problem, I would recommend going in for a little cognitive behavioral therapy. If these are unwelcome, intrusive thoughts, if after having sex for days or weeks, you flash on these moments and you are disgusted by the memories, something to unpack with a cognitive behavioral therapist who can help you get a grip on those kinds of unwelcome thoughts. But maybe just understanding the difference that arousal made in the moment and reminding yourself when you have these thoughts and you are disgusted by them, that you were aroused. And so something that, you know, when you're not in a state of arousal and apparently not able to recall your state of arousal would disgust you, like eating someone's ass or sucking someone's dick or drinking a gallon of their spit during a heavy makeout session, you did those things when you were aroused, when you were turned on, did things that, absent arousal and the turn on, you might find or are finding in those moments disgusting. So you just need to get in front of that. You need to argue with yourself. You need to interfere with your own thought processes that are getting you to a place of disgust before you have a chance to remind yourself that, hey, that turned you on. You were turned on in that moment. So maybe if you can rush in when you flash on a moment from sex, disconnected from arousal and desire, if you can rush in and remind yourself of the context of arousal and desire, you'll be less disgusted. And if that doesn't work, cognitive behavioral therapy. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Jessica Statler tweets, "Hey, at Fake Dan Savage, your rewrite of Single All the Way would be amazing, as you mentioned at the top of the Savage Lovecast last week. That is some content I would be all over. Let's gay it up on TV and show how great non-monogamous relationships can be." Mavis Beacon tweets to Dan Savage and Savage Lovecast listeners, asking for a friend, "Is it creepy or creative to invite a long-distance flirtation to send you a clone of Willie so you can enjoy them anytime you want?" Well, I think that would depend on the kind of relationship you have with your long-distance flirtation. What's creepy to one person might be just what somebody else was dying to be asked. I would err on the side of giving it a shot. And finally, Maggie Marigold tweets, "Hey, at Fake Dan Savage, when did you start doing the Magnum Savage Lovecast? I want to go back and listen with my new Magnum subscription to everything I missed the first time around." The Magnums start in April of 2013. Thank you for subscribing, Maggie, and enjoy. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And big thanks to everybody out there who tweeted about the show or posted your Instagram story about the show or Facebook about the show last week. We really appreciate how you guys get the word out about the Lovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hey, this is in response to episode 792, the two callers who called in regarding surviving emotional abuse. Dan, I thought your advice was really good. I also just wanted to say a few additional things. First of all, to the two people who called in, congratulations for recognizing what was going on, knowing that you needed and deserved a better situation. It can be really hard to recognize, especially the more kind of insidious, less obvious emotional abuse as opposed to physical abuse, even though physical abuse is also really hard to get out of too. For the first caller, I wanted to just highlight a resource that really helped me in getting out of an emotionally abusive relationship. It's a book called Why Does He Do That? And one of the main takeaways there is that men who abuse or people who abuse really just don't change. So don't have hope for that. Just take care of yourself. And for the second caller, I just wanted to highlight that they should think about having a safe exit plan. It sounds like there hadn't been physical abuse, but just in case, it's always good to call a domestic violence resource hotline just to make sure that you have a safe plan before blowing the relationship up, which you absolutely should do. I have a lot of hope for both of you and hope you are well.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 32-year-old male.
And I'm a 30-year-old woman. And we're calling you from Seattle to say thanks for all of your advice over the last several years that we've been listening to your show.
We met on a dating app about 4 hours after I got dumped by my long-term girlfriend.
And I was bored living in my parents' driveway in my van. We met, and after a beer or five, we went home together and then feigned indifference for several weeks after that. Fast forward to now, we're in a happy, open relationship, and we're getting married today. Thanks for all of your advice, and cheers to the motto that the best way to get over someone is to get under someone else.
Hey, Dan. I am calling in response to episode 792, the caller who is a trans guy living in Philly. This is a long shot caller, but I am also a trans masculine person living in Philly and having a hard time out there on the apps and looking to date another trans masculine person. I also got top surgery in the past year, and if you're interested, my suggestion would be to post a misconnection on the app Lex, and I'll find you there, and maybe we could grab a coffee.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the voice memo app on your phone, record your question or your comment, and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We do prefer those voice memos. They have better sound quality, but we love your calls however you choose to get them to us. This Thursday, January 6th, I will be hosting a special evening edition of Sack Lunch. That's our monthly hangout for Magnum Lovecast subscribers. We'll be playing games and having a few cocktails. I guess we're playing something called Quiplash. It's a game where the funniest answer wins and the winners get prizes. We're calling this edition of Sack Lunch Happy Sack. Take note of the special time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Get your drinks ready this Thursday and join me for some hopefully raunchy fun. Speaking of raunchy fun, New Year New Hump Film Festival tickets on sale now for the opening Hump Festivals in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Olympia, with all new brand spanking new porn flicks. And every purchase of a Hump ticket comes with a free one-month Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast. So go to humpfilmfest.com, grab your Hump tickets, and get your Magnum sub too. And then join us for Happy Sack on Thursday. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow James McKay on Twitter at JamesMcKayCYP. And follow Leah Carey on Instagram at GoodGirlsTalk. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.